4 p.m. on the 16th of February 2011. Members present are Representative Guttenberg, Representative T. Wilson, Vice Chair Fairclough, Stoltz, Co-Chair Thomas, Representative Dugan, Representative Edgman, and Representative Costello. Two measures before us today, House Bill 28, temporary professional licenses for spouses of military, and House Bill 65. Hope to move at least one of these bills out today. We'll start with House Bill 28. We have a committee substitute that's before us just for a purpose that will I'll have the vice chair move the CS and I'll object for explanation of the bill.
Mr. Chairman, move CS for House Bill 28, Finance 27-LS0192/S.
That's stated.
It's stated 2-15-11.
And I'll object and ask Ms. Schroeder or Koch.
Hotch.
Hotch. Not like the New York Hotch. I'm
Hotch.
Sorry.
Yeah, you're close.
That was a consonant away. Your district, that's probably like saying Eagle River is going to Chugiak.
Yeah. Chugiak.
Ms. Hotch. And why don't we describe the bill, sort of the changes that were the technical changes made, and we can do it all in a fell swoop.
Okay.
And agree. And I'd like to acknowledge we've been joined by Representative Jewell and Representative Newman.
House Bill 28 is focused on bettering the lives of our military members. The families of our military people are dominated by frequent deployments, long periods of single parenthood, and often relocations. Military spouses are some of the most mobile populations in the country, seeing 14.5% of the military spouses crossing state lines each year, as opposed to 1.1% of civilian spouses. Often these moves occur every 2 to 4 years. When a service member is deciding whether or not he or she wants to stay in the military, they will often consider whether or not their spouse can maintain employment, and this directly affects the readiness of our armed forces. Military spouses are less likely to be employed than their civilian counterparts, and if they are employed, they tend to earn less than their civilian counterparts. However, they are not unlike their civilian counterparts. They depend on two incomes, and they want to achieve their goals and aspirations. So House Bill 28 assists spouses in their transition to the state. And I can go on to explain the changes, if you like.
And how about folks that haven't seen the CS? They're primarily technical in nature, and can describe the history and description both in a fell swoop again.
Most of the changes in the CS are at the request of the department. And everywhere the word department appears in the bill, we have inserted or appropriate board, because in some instances the department regulates the profession, and in some instances there is actually a board to do that. And then also after the word temporary, we've inserted courtesy everywhere that appears throughout the bill. The other change occurs on page 3. In the previous version, there was a list of exemptions, and it was Marine pilots and attorneys, and we have removed the exemption for Marine pilots. That was inserted. The profession was flagged to me by the department as being possibly problematic. However, upon further consideration, the regulations are very tight, and they don't feel that there's going to be an issue with them complying with the bill.
The lawyers weren't going to give an inch on anything. So that's a really unusual dynamic.
With the exception of the presenter.
The Bar Association. That's
yes. Okay.
They certainly have, I think they have noticed to us that they have a special, an unusual and privileged position, so I don't want to not accommodate them as we usually do. Representative Wilson.
I received a couple calls saying that this bill doesn't do anything that isn't already being done. Can you tell me exactly what it's addressing that you feel isn't being done currently?
Through the Chair, Representative Wilson, this bill is not a criticism of what's going on right now. A lot of this is already being done, but it's in regulation. This puts it in statute. is a separate section for military spouses, so there will be special consideration for military spouses. And the main difference is that on page 2, there is the provision about expediting the issuance of the license. Because if you're only here for 2 years and it takes you 6 months to get licensed, it's very difficult to find employment.
Thank you.
Any other questions on the technical changes? I'll remove my objection for adopting the CS. The CS, as presented, is before us, and get to the substance of the bill in order. Any questions before we go over to Jim Guttner?
Thank you. And I had a similar call, and I see that we've shortened it to 180 days. Are boards and commissions capable of acting on in that time frame? Do they have the resources to there might be a major deployment of a Stryker brigade, 5,000 people moving into the state, and a couple of thousand spouse, and a couple hundred of those have licenses. And do they have the ability to respond to this in appropriate time?
Chair, Representative Guttenberg, I believe that they do. We have had discussions with the department about that. There are ways that some boards only meet a couple times a year. There are ways for those boards to vote over email or through mail or something, and there is a representative from the division here that can explain that in further detail if you like.
And we don't have a lot of public testimony in this, so why don't we invite Mr. Haviger up here to hear his comments and on the record, and be able to respond to concerns, questions, inquiries, curiosities, whatever.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Don Haviger, Division Director for Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. And real briefly, I think Casey covered the bill adequately. I broke it down into 6 different tasks as I looked at the bill. Each of those tasks is something that we're already familiar with in the 40 other professions that we're working with. So I don't see this as really much of an impact to the division, with the exception that perhaps expedited is a new process for us insofar as the military is concerned. But with that, I think we can easily absorb this work, and therefore it's a zero fiscal note. And to Representative Guttenberg's inquiry, there are methodologies through mail vote, et cetera, to get the application before boards in an expedited manner, even though some of them only do meet twice a year.
Mr. Haviger, would you have any objections to Section E on page 3 being deleted?
We have nothing to do with that profession. So.
No objection.
I mean.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Haviger? Ms. Hotch, does this affect the Teacher Practices Commission licensing of educators?
This bill per se does not affect teachers. Teachers already have something in statute that is very, very similar to this bill, and it's working well for them, so we decided not to mess with perfection.
Well, it's not broke yet. You want to fix it until it is. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Well, just why don't you both hang by in case is there any member of the public wishes to testify here in Juneau? Anybody online? I do have one person listed, Mark Sansouci.
Sansouci.
From the Department of Defense. Mr. Sansouci, are you online?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'm online. Thank you. For the record, my name is Mark Sansouci, and I am the regional liaison for military families for the Northwest, including Alaska, and I work for the Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Military Community and Family Policy. Sorry, I couldn't be up there today. I was up there last week and got to meet a lot of y'all, and that was great. I heard the sound, the audio here is going kind of in and out a little bit, but Casey Hotch did a great job, and I heard Mr. Haviger talk about the agency being able to handle this, so I should err on the side of brevity. I'll just pause to say that this is the number one priority of the Defense State Liaison Office, trying to take care of our military spouses and giving them up to 6 months to enable them to get to work right away while fulfilling any requirements that Alaska imposes would certainly be a great help. Alaska has a chance to join Florida, who passed this last year, to be on the cutting edge of doing these types of things for our military spouses. So, Representative Thomas, your sponsorship is greatly appreciated, and I greatly appreciate the consideration of the committee today, and I stand by for any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Sansusi? Thank you. Appreciate your availability and your appearance here last week. We'll go on to the fiscal note. Mr. Habinger, your department that produced the fiscal note. Your division under Commerce and something another.
Mr. Chairman, we did, and as I mentioned earlier, we believe all these tasks are already happening in one form or another, or a slight variation on tasks that we're already doing, and maybe a slight adjustment. With that, we think we can absorb this work relatively easily. Through the few programs that we already do have military exemption, we have three of them, as Casey said, by regulation. It's a relatively minor impact on the division, and so we think we'll absorb it and no additional fiscal attached.
I wasn't arguing with this. I was actually just want to reinforce that it was zero and you weren't going to be coming back for money, and actually this is very refreshing to say the department wants to do something because it hasn't been past practice. So I think I thank you again. I don't want you to get another headline if you have to buy donuts or something when you do that in your office. I just want to reinforce that this is a zero fiscal note. I appreciate you absorbing this function through your normal activities. Any other questions from the committee? Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. DC, I was just looking at the professions covered under this list, and how was this list brought together, and was there other professions that you maybe thought about that weren't included on this list?
Through the Chair, Representative Newman, this list is the professions that the division regulates. It's all of them. And I believe that this list probably does not include Marine Corps, but it'll be on there after the CS. And the other profession that is in high demand is teachers. And like I mentioned before, teachers are already doing something very well in statute. And those are the main ones. And this is very expansive. There are a lot of professions under the division of licensing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Guttenberg.
This is a good bill. And the vast majority of circumstances, the people transferring in and looking for licenses are probably not going to have any trouble at all. But again, there's those that do is problematic, and I think I asked some questions. On page 2, my 13, section 4 and 5, I'm just wondering if our definitions line up with some standard where somebody else transferring from another jurisdiction, what unresolved complaints and reviews and procedures and all those things meet, and then if there's a dispute, is there an appeal process that we don't have in here that boards and commissions normally has for people objecting to things? Are we leaving that out of this someplace, or is it in another section of the statute? So there's two questions there.
Through the chair, I represent Guttenberg. We believe that our process, first of all, this is incorporated in the central licensing statute, and so it's a piece of, rather extensive operational diagram, if you will, on how we're to treat the professions and license them. In that, we think that there are a number of prohibitions or authorities that we can use to verify or double check that the credentialing commitment here is accurate. In other words, if there's nothing that's happening to their license in any other place, they will sell through, as you said. But if indeed something does come up and we have, for example, an investigative unit that can double check those things, and if there is, if you will, a mark against a license in another jurisdiction, we believe this will come forward, and then either a board or the department can further review and see if it's substantial enough to refuse the license, or if it needs any tweaks, like, for example, a probationary period or those kinds of activities. But we believe we can handle some of those odd cases, if you will.
Thank you, Paulo. So, and at the end of the day, they're here 180 days, and they're here another 180 days, and then they're staying. Is there a way for them to just go from this provisional licensing to a permanent licensing?
Absolutely.
Any other questions? Any other comments before the committee, before if there's a motion from the House tonight?
Me? Mr. Chairman, I move from committee CS for House Bill number 28, version 27, dash LS0192, /S, date 2/15/11. With the company fiscal note from the committee with individual recommendations.
special order from Representative Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to welcome one of my constituents who's here today, Maureen Dolphin, who's been coming to Juneau for years, and now she's wanting to participate live in the audience rather than watching on her her internet. So wanted to welcome Maureen.
Welcome.
The rear of the camera.
Yeah.
The camera's up there.
We have before us House Bill 65.
For the record, my name is Bryce Hedgman, House District Representative for House District 37. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for hearing the bill today. And the bill, in some measures, is a housekeeping bill, if you will, in the sense that what it does is it makes the enables the regional housing authorities to more easily access the Senior Citizens Housing Development Fund. And right now, the 14 housing authorities around the state. Actually, about half of them have created, according to the existing statute, they've created a 501c3 or a 4 non-for-profit to be eligible. But what this bill does, it allows the other half of the regional housing authorities to essentially be named in statute in Title 18 so that they can be recipients of a senior housing grant fund that exists within Alaska Housing and Finance Corporation. And it's a fund that is in the FY12 budget about $4 to $5 million, and it's over time been somewhere between $4 and $6 million in the total funding amount. And by putting the housing authorities in the statute would allow them to more easily access this funding source to build senior houses, and to couple with the multitude of sources of funding it takes to build the senior housing. Everything from HUD funds to Nellie Commission funds, USDA funds, certainly HFC funds, as well as for the Regional Housing Authorities and Native American Housing and Self-Determination Act funds, or NAHASDA. And the housing authorities, this is what they do. They build housing units. They're very good at working with individuals, certainly with seniors as well, and getting them into the housing units. Most of the units, as I understand it, are multi-complex units built around the state. And so House Bill 65 essentially just puts them directly into Title 18 so they can qualify for this source of money within Alaska Housing Finance Corporation and really be able to partner with the various funding agencies to build low-income senior housing around the state. The bill is supported by Alaska Commission on Aging, American Association of Retired Persons, certainly by Alaska Housing Finance Corporations, the housing authorities themselves. We actually got the idea for the bill from the Lucian Housing Authority, and it carries a zero fiscal note. And Mr. Chairman, I think that kind of gives a high-level overview, and we have several people online for more questions. Possibly testimony, but I'd certainly be happy to take any additional questions that the committee members may have.
Questions from the
next Newman, and what's up here? Mr. Chair, Representative Edwin, I don't know how far you can answer this, but how familiar are you with the Senior Access Program and how that works?
Through the Chair, Representative Newman, I'm perfectly familiar with it, doing my research in the bill, so I guess what I'd like to do is punt, hand that off to Alaska Housing Finance Corporation and allow them to probably answer your question more accurately.
We'll hold that until somebody online is available, and we'll come back to you at that point, Representative Newman, to clarify or pay for Representative Hira.
Thanks. Representative Edwin, the bill seems appropriate, and I think you've explained the need for it. So I support it. The question, just in case I get asked, I guess I wonder if there's a limited pool of money and you expand the number of potential recipients for it, that I guess makes less money available for those who already rely on it, and what's the answer to that?
Through the Chair, Representative Guerra, the bill has, it has unanimous support, so it's not seen as being a competitor for existing entities that would actually want to build senior housing. It's actually being seen as making the housing authorities be more of a player and actually going out and building low-income senior housing units throughout the state, realizing that, you know, this is what housing authorities do, and that housing authorities have access to some federal funds in instances that the other builders, public housing, may not have. So it's more sort of a partnership effort as opposed to bringing another competitor for a fund source that admittedly is, you know, not the largest around. It's $4 to $6 million, give or take. So if that would be the way that I'd respond to your question.
Thanks.
Any questions? Do you want to stay in place or? What's your preference?
Yeah, I'll stay in place.
Okay. Mr. Chairman. So whatever you're more comfortable with, and we'll go into the public testimony, and I think we'll have some of the folks that. What's this? Third Bristol Bay. Mr. McClure, you here in the audience or online?
For the record, my name is David McClure, Executive Director, Bristol Bay Housing Authority. And I am available for any questions that any member may have.
Okay. How's the weather there?
Beautiful. Nice, sunny, and Mr. Chairman, we also waved at you back when you folks waved to us.
Very good. I'll just have to be reminded of people watching and listening, because sometimes I get a little careless myself. But are there any other questions? And certainly if there are points that come up, Mr. McClure, we'll come back to you if you wish. Mark Romick. Elaine Mello.
Mr. Chairman, this is Mark Romick with the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, and we're just here for question availability. We don't really have any testimony.
Since Mr. Fauske isn't there, are you the ones who are going to bless this bill officially?
That is correct, Mr. Chairman.
Brian Boucher.
Okay. And that was an official, you blessed the bill?
That is correct.
Okay. Stacey Schubert?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Like him, I too bless the bill.
Okay, I'm glad we have plenty of folks from AHFC there. Any questions for those folks online? Representative Newman, did you want to re-ask your question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Stacey, can you explain the senior access program a little bit?
Through the chair, this is Mark Romick, the director of the planning department, and Stacey has graciously delegated that responsibility to your question. The planning department is the administrator of the senior access program. If you have a specific question about how it works or who the grantees are, I'd be happy to answer those questions.
Yes. Follow up, Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just was trying to learn a little bit more about it. I don't need to get into two details, but just trying to learn a little bit.
Now is the time, though, because we certainly don't get into this in depth on the floor, and these guys aren't going to be available. Did you have a follow-up that you're wishing, Representative Newman?
Yeah, how it's funded and how many people apply to this.
Yeah. Mr. McClure? Mr. Romick, I believe.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, the Senior Access Program is a component of the Senior Housing Development Fund. So the total fund that's appropriated each year by the legislature, a portion of it is set aside for the Senior Access Program. And the program is designed to provide accessibility modifications for seniors so that they can live in their home longer than they would normally without those accommodations. And the funding is made available through a competitive process, and there are, I think, three grantees statewide that operate the program in various communities. I believe we serve anywhere from 100 to 150 seniors a year, depending on the type of accessibility modification that they need to their home. And those modifications can be as little as putting a ramp on the front of the house or the apartment or installing a chairlift inside the unit. That's kind of a rough overview of how the program works.
And Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a follow-up on it, Mark. And the reason I asked that, obviously, we're very aware of how important it is to try and keep seniors in their homes. You know, and the housing units are good programs, but making sure we have access into there is very important in what we do. And so how would, because this is a bill making regional native housing authorities eligible to receive those grants, is that how access for homes or improvements into homes for a senior access program, can they just go through their native housing authorities on all these programs then?
Through the Chair, Representative Newman, with this change to the bill, the housing authorities would be able to apply directly to us if they wanted, in the next competitive cycle, if they wanted to implement a senior access program through this funding source in their region. Right now, I don't believe we have any housing authorities that are participants in the program. And I'm not sure if that's because of the 501c3 requirement or whether they have other resources available to or for accessibility modifications in their communities.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sure Representative Edgman will be on it and making sure we got access to as many people as we can and helping them figure out ways to do that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for clarity, since we were focusing out on one component of the Senior Housing Development Fund, there, I just wanted to make sure that HB 65 addresses accessibility for native housing, for native housing authorities for the entire Senior Citizen Housing Development Fund. Is that correct?
Yes, through the Chair, Representative Fairclough, that's actually a good point to make, and that is that although the regional housing authorities in Alaska statute are named as native housing authorities, they're in fact housing authorities that direct their benefits toward low-income residents, and it's not race or ethnic.
Mr. Chairman.
But there is an age bias, right?
Yes.
Okay. Representative Fairclough.
Thank you. So to expand on Representative Newman's point, there are three different categories under the program. The Greater Opportunities for Affordable Living, it's called a goal. The Senior Access Program that was just spoken about, and then pre-development grants that are qualified for. In addition, in the packet, there are examples of those who had received funding from this source already, such as Chugach Colony Estates Grantee and Palmer Senior Center, Meadow Lakes Grantee, Meadow Lakes Community Council. I'm probably going to mess it up now. Togiak Senior Housing Grantee, Bristol Bay Housing Development Corporation. So there, I just wanted to make sure it wasn't just focused in on the Senior Access Program. That's just one component of it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dettenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You've got Cook Inlet, Aleutians, Kodiak, Bristol Bay. And you've got the Interior Regional Housing Authority, and I'm not sure directing it to, but whoever knows. Does the Interior Region go down to Cantwell? Because that's pretty far from Fairbanks, and that's the far southern tip of my district, and the Cantwell, the Native community of Cantwell has talked to me about this issue. So expanding that out, is there any region left uncovered in the state by passing this? Is there somebody outside of the regional circle?
Representative Edgman.
Through the Chair, Representative Guttenberg, the Director of the Housing Authorities Association is back east at the moment. She would be the one to answer specifically. I'm going to look around my staff and see if do we have a response. Yeah, that's my understanding, too, as well, that the state is fully covered by the 14.
Perhaps one of the folks from HFC can, just on the record while they're here, just so we don't have any ambiguity on this issue. So it's a legitimate question. That, Mr. Romick?
Mr. Chairman, or Representative Edgman is correct. The entire state is covered by the regional housing authorities.
As long as we blessed it, I want to make sure we had the whole baby.
Mr. Chairman, Stacey Schubert also concurs.
Very good. That's an inside joke there. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. The question's been asked.
Okay. Any Representative Dugan.
Mr. Chairman, this is a question that's going to probably just prove that I'm not very bright. But In the table that was attached with this, there's housing development funds and then housing development funds that come from the Denali Commission. But where did the original housing development funds come from?
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, my response to me depends on who is the actual builder of the project. If it's a housing authority, it may be the HOSDA funds, federal funds that sort of act as the seed funds, and then you layer it with Denali Commission funds and USDA funds and HUD funds, and then hopefully through the passage of this bill, the senior housing grants through HFC.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So that the amounts that are listed in this table, where it goes from $3.8 million to $4.4 million, aren't limits in that sense. They are sort of what was available in various sources to finance this much work in those years. All right.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dugan, that might be a great question for HFC because it's going to give you just a stock response.
Sure. Somebody from HFC want to tackle that? We need to read the question rephrased.
Mr. Chairman, this is Mark Romick. If you would be so kind to restate the question, that would be helpful for us.
I can have Representative Dugan restate it. I don't even remember it.
I'm not as memorable as I think.
Were you talking to me?
Wait a minute. Thank you. What I'm trying to do is establish how the amounts that are shown in this table for housing development funds were reached. If I'm assuming that they aren't just sort of general funds that got arbitrarily decided to be in this amount. So if that's not the case, if it is, tell me. And if it's not, tell me where that money came from.
Mr. Romick.
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, if you're referring to the total amount in the senior housing development fund or the total development cost of each project, which comes from a multiple of different sources, as Representative Edgman indicated. I'm not sure which question you're asking.
I don't know if you have this in front of me or not, but I'm we're looking at a table that shows the housing development funds that were available in Alaska in certain years. And what this shows is that in a couple of years there was funds from the Denali Commission and a couple there aren't. And so the last number in this sequence is $4.4 million. It says in process. There's no money there from the Denali Commission. And I'm just trying to find out where that $4.4 million came from.
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, I believe all of that 4.4 is general. In the past, it's been corporate funds, and I believe under our current fiscal year capital budget request, a portion of it is general funds. But in the past, it's been primarily corporate funds.
Has that satisfied your curiosity or muddled it?
It has not, Mr. Chairman. What do you mean by corporate funds, please?
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, HFC corporate receipts that are appropriated as I believe the technical term is HFC corporate dividend.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Dugan. Maybe another way to respond to your question is to say that the senior housing fund process in this year it's in the capital budget for $4.5 million, as Mr. Roman just described, the source of it, is a pretty rigorous process in terms of the money being awarded. HFC looks at the application and they look at the operating expenses, utility bills. They look at the proposal that has been submitted to HFC. And then they also line it up against their thermal energy standards and what have you. So it's not like any sort of proposal could come forward to HFC and be funded simply because it look good on paper. It's a pretty rigorous process that's involved in terms of taking the 4.5 that's in the capital budget this year and allocating it to builders of low-income senior housing throughout the state.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, if I might, I wasn't concerned that there was no vetting that went on here. I just wanted to know what it was. Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That led me to a question. I just want to make sure. So everything in the senior part of the first column that we were talking about, is that all state funds from the general fund?
I am not looking at the document. You are, so.
That's on the examples of senior housing projects partly funded with the senior citizen housing development.
Looks like this.
We'll have a brief at ease for council.
Spice things up and finding my way through my binder here. I guess the short answer would be yes, it is state funds.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Is there anybody out there? Oh, Costello. We're talking so much,
I was just curious about the Denali Commission funding. Are we expecting no funding from that source in the future?
Mr. Chairman, can we direct that to HFC folks?
Mr. Romick, Ms. Schubert, whoever.
Mr. Chair, Representative Costello, we are not expecting any funding from the Denali Commission in the next fiscal year, given the current state of their appropriations from Congress.
Thank you.
We're hoping, but not expecting, or not even hoping.
Motion.
Are there any other Representative Fairclough?
Again, for my own clarity, when we're looking at the second column that Representative Edgman was referring to, the Senior Housing Projects Fund, and we said it's coming from the state of Alaska, does that come from the general fund or it comes from corporate receipts or from the Alaska Housing Authority per se? AHFC.
Mr. Again, I want to refer to HFC because I want to.
What might otherwise be available for capital budgets and so. Sure. Want another brief at ease? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is the first time I present this bill. My staff has done it in the past, so I apologize for tripping over some of these details. But the money does come from a general fund, and it's obviously the capital budget process.
No, Mr. Chairman. I'm good.
Any other questions? Is there any other public testimony other than the folks at AHFC or Bristol Bay Housing Authority? Anybody here in Juneau? Anybody offline on any other source? Hearing none, we'll close public testimony. Let's see. Fiscal note, Mr. Armstrong, you had call up my staff, James Armstrong, to discuss the fiscal note. Just a very technical point.
Good afternoon. James Armstrong, staff representative Schultz. In the members' packets, you should have a new fiscal note. It's dated the same as the other fiscal note. One technical change you'll see in this right on the top here, the O&B component number. The previous one was miscoded. It's a coding mechanism that Ledge Finance and O&B use. So the correct number should be 110. That is for AHFC. The other one was 109, which was the Permanent Fund Corporation.
So when the motion is to move the bill out of committee, it'll be with that noted fiscal note for the record. So. Thank you, Mr. Armstrong. I think we've played this one out. I just have one question, I guess, on sustainability. You know, we're certainly facing some real crisis proportions of the senior housing and facilities in Wasilla. And we had a politician running it. That probably was one of the problems for a big chunk of the time. What are the sustainability plans? So I don't want to replicate what's happened in parts of my region.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's an excellent question, and clearly the senior population in terms of growth, it's the fastest growing segment in Alaska, and so I think that's probably going to be an ongoing question.
Just want to, I didn't expect an answer, but I just want to note it because we're really facing that in my community, and it's we just need to keep an eye on those. We've got the vast majority of them, we don't hear about problems, but certainly the ones that are problems occupy the vast majority of our time. And I know I see some nodding from my colleague from the Matsu Valley, those from which we speak. Are there any other questions on this bill? Representative Fairclough?
Chairman, I'd like to move from committee HB 65-27-LS0335 /A from committee with attached fiscal notes and individual committee recommendations.
As noted with the change in the fiscal note, that I hear no objections, that bill moves out of committee. Our next hearing will be tomorrow at 1:30. We'll have a discussion on federal regulatory issues affecting economic development in Alaska, and I'm privileged to have Attorney General Burns, DNR Commissioner Sullivan, North Slope Borough Mayor Edward Itta, and unnoticed on the calendar, but I believe Rex Rock from Arctic Slope Regional Corporation from the Committee of Point Hope, who I hope to see in the basketball tournament if we're out of here for that weekend. That will be our presenting group, and I'm really happy to have that. I expect it will take the full 2 hours for that presentation. Any other business before the committee, Mr. Co-Chair?
Just told me to get well.
Any advice? Any
advice? No.
With that, we're stick around to sign the committee report, and we are adjourned until tomorrow. Thank you. Good to see you in that position for a little bit.
Thank you.
Go ahead.